This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Okay, today's show is Do You DIY? And we have today with us Stephen Huang from Kaohsiung DE Keqi Daxue in Taiwan. Stephen, you want to say something?
Yes, how are you, everybody? Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Okay. Just cut off if you don't like it.
We can always, that's called post-production, and we try to do as little as possible.
Yes.
Okay, and we also have James Stanworth, a professor who's currently living in Tainan and teaching in Zhanghua, in Taiwan, at Zhanghua Sifan Daxue in the management department there. Is that right, James?
That's right. Hello to you, Clyde. Hello to Stephen. It's great to be with you. I'm looking forward to this discussion we're going to have on DIY today.
Great. Okay, I thought I'd just kick it off with the main topic, which is, of course, DIY. And I think this is kind of relevant to me because imagine the very first job I ever had in my life was at a DIY store. Has anybody else here worked in a DIY store or a hardware store before?
No.
I worked in a hardware store when I was 16.
Wow.
I remember one incident was very clear in my mind, and I think it almost got me fired. It was a guy came in to get a lawnmower. Obviously, the hardware store rented lawnmowers. And I had no idea about that because I was hired and they just said, okay, begin. Now, I did know about hardware a little bit, but I didn't know anything about the store. And so I'm just walking around the store, I help people find some screws and nuts and stuff. And one guy came in and said he's got to get a lawnmower. And so I said, okay, I'm going to get a lawnmower. So I went into the back of the shop, got a lawnmower there. I thought he was renting, signed some papers. He took it out. And a day later, the boss was just fuming mad. I had given him a lawnmower that was in for repair. And the engine, supposedly when he tried to start it, flew off. And I was told he was lucky he wasn't injured, you know.
So that was your early contact with DIY.
I had a lot of experience with I had a neighbor who was a woodworker, actually. And this guy is just amazing. He could work, he could do anything in wood. And he used to do like grandfather clocks by hand, you know, with no screws, no nails. He would say his motto was, you know, never touch a screw. And so, you know, it's very interesting. A lot of people in the States do the really serious stuff, but then the in-between people, not so serious, but just doing their DIY stuff at home, fixing things up is really a lot. And I remember a lot of TV shows back home, too, about these kind of fix-it-upper kind of things. And I think I've seen some from the UK, James. You guys have a lot of media that emphasizes this DIY stuff?
Yes, it was real interesting that you were talking about working in a DIY store. And they're just everywhere. I mean, even a friend I've got back home, who's probably one of the most least sort of inclined to use his hands to build anything, has a drill at home. I mean, it's just, it's almost like having a telephone at home. Someone will have a drill, at least just a few screwdrivers, to do even just some of what we would call the most basic DIY, like putting up a shelf or putting up a picture, or these kind of fairly simple DIY jobs. It's just really part of the routine of every household.
Yeah, everybody's got some stuff. In the United States, it's very common for people to have a garage that they've converted to all their, basically a tool shed. And in fact, in the last 10 years, I've seen lots of people's houses there. They do buy tool sheds. They buy these sheds they drop in the back of their yard, and they buy the sheds from the big box stores, which sell this stuff just like big kits. And yeah, they keep all their tools there. And James has got a good point that the drills, the screws, all this kind of stuff. Stephen, when you were growing up, did your parents have a lot of tools around the house?
No, not so many.
You know, go ahead.
We always ask the plumber or someone to fix our stuff.
Mm. That's a good point.
Yeah. The little thing we do it by our own, but most of the opportunity we ask the professionals.
So you hire people to come in and do it?
Yes, yes.
That's just so the cost of labor in UK makes that just so impossible. If you call a plumber to come just take a look at something now, it'll cost the best part of 50 UK pounds, which is like about 3,000 Taiwanese dollars. So that's just before they've even started to actually do any work.
that's just walking into the house.
Because it's very convenient to ask the plumber around your house. And the price was not so expensive.
In
old days.
In UK, once you've paid that money, you can go and buy all the tools and just do it yourself. So some people, when they add the money up, they say, well, I can either pay the plumber or I can go and buy the tools. And if I have the same problem again, I can fix it myself. The economics of it are so clear now.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the economics is certainly one part of it. Everyone, you know, same in the States, you know, you to get a plumber out, unless it's somebody you know who's a friend who can come and do it for a favor, you know, really cheap. But Stephen, nowadays, you know, certainly labor costs are pretty high in Taiwan, you know.
Yes.
What's the situation these days?
Yeah.
So what do you think these days about people coming over? Do people still hire out so easily?
No. Because the labor cost is higher, and people have more leisure time, and they will do by their own.
More leisure time.
DIY themselves.
Yeah, so more leisure time, I guess. It's not really leisure, is it, when you're working on your house?
Right.
I'm not sure this was a good exchange.
Yeah, but they don't go to work. I mean, they don't work for their boss, but for themselves and their family.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, so this was at least a very interesting contrast, because I know, like, for example, in my own in-laws' family out in the countryside, I often have a difficult time to find the right tools. They have tools lying around, but they're never just the right tool. And even today, they just basically hire out everything, and they're just farmers out in the countryside. And you know, when something's broken or not working, they just hire someone in to come take care of it.
Yes.
Even today, even with that so-called increased cost, you know.
Yep.
So anyway, it seems like the direction here is, in Taiwan, we do have a similar kind of trend, because now we have the big box stores that have arrived. And of course, for DIY, the biggest one is a B&Q, I think. Stephen, is that the biggest DIY store in Taiwan?
Yes, almost.
Yeah, it's pretty huge.
I think at last count, they had at least 14 stores across the country. And the number must be up. I think that was the 2002 figure.
Yeah, they're expanding fast. I know they have a new store in Taichung, too. So I've got some video together here to kind of compare these and contrast these situations. And the first video I have on the page is the real traditional, what we call five metal store. Stephen, did you take a look at that video? I think it's shot by one of my students, and he was walking in and and he asked for, about a wrench, I think, and the guy who owned the store there. I thought it was real interesting looking at the video there because the store is kind of dark inside, lots of stuff out on the street, and you can see the boss. He even has like an old wooden desk there for his storefront. I thought that was very ad hoc, very interesting kind of setup.
Yeah, I like the way, yes, as you sort of go in and the sort of desk is tucked inside and the there isn't really walls. The walls are created just by the products sort of hanging around him at his desk.
Yeah, it's got that feeling to it that you're not sure how far back in the store you can walk or that you want to walk. It's a little bit scary.
Exactly. Yeah, as you go further back, it's sort of... the video shows some of the real narrow little alleys and passageways with products falling out. I mean, you're really not sure whether you can go in, and there's just a mess of stuff everywhere.
Yeah, this is what my student, Jimmy, who's working on this stuff, he calls this the real traditional Five Metal Stores. Hey, Stephen, do you have any idea why it's called Five Metals? In Chinese, it's called Five Metals.
Yeah, Wujin, yeah, right. Because like how can I say? A lot of kitchen stuff.
Kitchen stuff?
Yeah. Most of them are kitchen stuff of the metal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the metal in Chinese, they always call, they can call it, five metals.
Okay. So, Wujing is a kind of it's kind of a slang for just all this kind of hardware stuff.
Yeah, hardware. But, and most of them the metal and
aluminum and steel.
Yeah, right. And this kind of stuff we because made of this material we call it wujin.
Oh, okay, so wujin can also be used in like a different situation, maybe to just say a bunch of metal.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not exclusive to mean hardware stores then, right?
Yes, but most of them are hardware.
Yeah, it seems because every store has the big sign out there saying Wujing store in some way or some form.
Yeah,
we need to get Robert on our show, Robert Reynolds, who's an expert on Chinese linguistics, and he can analyze all these things for us.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure he can tell us exactly where the word comes from.
Okay, do you know 锄头?
Yes.
The famous 锄头,
yes,
right? Uh-huh. It also can be included in the wujin. Because back in the time, the farmers will buy anything, any kind of stuff from the Wujin store.
Gotcha. So it comes from farmers going in there and buying any kind of supply.
Yes, and most of them are made of metal and aluminum and some kind of these materials.
Gotcha, that makes sense. So I think every place has them in Taiwan. I mean, they're everywhere in Taichung. How about down there in Tainan, James? You got a lot of these five metal stores?
Yeah, there's a lot of these type of stores tucked away, particularly in the sort of back alleys and so on. And just like the video shows, that sort of deep store with dark and deep, and you keep going in and finding more and more things, and people sort of come and go, and each one seems to some seem to be much more specialized though in hooks or particular hangings or particular fixtures. There's a few I've gone into to look for like bolts when I'm wanting to build a little wooden table for a computer, and this place just stored just nothing but bolts and fixings. So, and the guy was real helpful, and it was just a great experience.
That's interesting, because in the first video, yeah, you can see the owner of the store. He's just so helpful. And, you know, he just rips things. He rips the wrenches right out of the package and puts them together for Jimmy, who was shooting the video. And so you got that same experience, James, that real helpful kind of person. Was the person you're dealing with the owner of the store, by the way?
That's right. It was the owner, and yeah, he was real knowledgeable. I was pulling off a little bolt that I wanted to use to fix this little desk together I was making, and he immediately asked if I needed a drill, and then he went and found that drill and checked out. I knew what I was doing, and so on. It was real helpful. Not so friendly, but his whole attitude was really helpful.
Yeah, very interesting. Sounds like you're doing some DIY there yourself, James.
I was, yes.
Yeah, well, Jimmy's video shows that real clear, how the owner gets involved in it. And the other videos, that we have a couple after that, and they show the kind of more up-to-date DIY store that I think is just so common in Taiwan, and we can see them in Hong Kong. Although in China, when I've been to China, when Beijing, Shanghai area, it still seems to me that most of the hardware stores are that older type where, you know, there's really no organization really at all. But in Taiwan, they've kind of moved up to compete, I think. And they have these newer stores that have nice lighting inside, music playing inside. They have aisles that are numbered, including, you know, names on there. Of course, you won't find them in English, but they're listed in Chinese. And in the one where I go looking for the scissors, you can see the very normal way people do this. They walk into the Five Metal store, they encounter the first person behind the desk and say, "Where can I find big scissors?" And they say, "That's aisle three," or "That's aisle two." And I find that this is a really nice competitive upgrade that I've seen over maybe the last 10 years in Taiwan. Stephen, have you noticed these stores kind of changing this way?
Yes, but I do not prepare for it, but maybe I can add more information for you.
Yeah, you're not a DIY guy, right?
No, nah. No, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be going to stores to see these things, and this is another point. I'm thinking not many people in Taiwan really do a lot of DIY. Stephen, it seems like you're not doing much at all.
Right, you are right. You are right. Yeah, but the people doing DIY here increased.
Yeah, what kind of demographic do you think we're looking at? Because I think for people who are like my in-laws, my father-in-law, yes, my mother-in-law, even though they're farmers and they do everything themselves, still, when it comes to fixing anything, they just hire someone in. I don't see them do anything that way. They haven't changed at all. But then I look at some of my colleagues where I teach as a professor, and I think I saw a lot of people, like after the Taiwan earthquake, a lot of people kind of got together and started doing a lot of DIY on their houses. I noticed that. So what do you think the demographic is on that?
Oh, okay. The younger generation, and part of the middle age,
okay, I guess, is like us guys, right? In their 40s, yes. And youngers would be maybe
20 or something.
Mm-hmm, 20-somethings.
Yeah, 20-something, and 30 and 40, a little bit of 40.
Yeah, James, do you see a lot of people doing this kind of stuff, and what do you think the demographic is?
Yeah, this is something I've thought about, because when I'm teaching, this is one question I ask some of my students. I say, well, have you been into B&Q, which is this large box store format for DIY? And a little splattering of the students will say yes. They've dropped in. And I say to them, well, how about your parents? Have they gone in there? And do they go shopping there? Do they do DIY? And a lot of them just turn around and say no, or they say, well, if we need our house remodeled, we'll call someone in to do that remodeling. But I think there's a couple of points that sort of started to emerge as I was talking to people about who seems to go there and why and so on. And one was a real interesting one that, of course, when you go out into a street in Taiwan, you're just surrounded by all these little eateries, these little small shops, and a lot of people will, you know, decorate those themselves, do some of the basic decor like the painting and so on. I was just talking to a guy who runs a small chain of spaghetti stores, and when I looked down at his hands, I said, have you been sort of playing with your wife's nail varnish? And he said, no, you know, I've been painting up my store, and, you know, I've been using red, black, and white colors because they're particularly auspicious. And I dropped into B&Q to get the paints and the paintbrush and this kind of thing. So I think actually there's the point I'm getting at is that there is this group of small stores, small outlets that themselves become a market for the DIY chains, not always the homeowner, but the people who are actually maybe themselves running their own little eatery or little outlet of some sort.
Yeah, that's a great point. We should mention that the students you're talking about, I think, are mostly adult students, aren't they, James?
Yes, they're in the sort of age range of sort of 23 to 26, 27, that kind of age group.
Yeah, so we're not talking about teenagers who obviously wouldn't be doing a lot of that. So, yeah, that's good. Yeah. I think when I've been to B&Q, the few times I've been there, and I was shooting this video just yesterday, you can see the people in there are adults. I noticed that when I was walking through the store, you can't really see it in the video because it's disorienting, but when I was walking through the store, most of the people who were in the store were over in the area of the store where you buy complete things. In other words, you buy a complete shelf, you buy a complete closet, you buy a complete lamp. So these were things like you just take them home and install them, you put them in. It's not a major project. Whereas at the Five Metals store we see everywhere, the guys who come in and out of there, in fact, you can see one in Jimmy's first video. He's this kind of worker coming right out of there. They're very typical. They're mostly workers who are either employed in the industry of fixer-uppers, basically, or they're really doing some kind of contracting job, and they come in and pick up some pieces they don't happen to have.
Yeah, I think that's a real great point. Yes, when I was in the Five Metal store, that was the only clientele, the slightly older guys who were clearly the workers, basically, and they knew exactly what they wanted. It was all very technical and precise, and they were in and out and just knew exactly what they wanted. And I think it contrasts really with UK and B&Q, for example, and other big chains there have become real mainstream just because costs have dropped right down, so the stores are really competitive and cheap, even for mainstream builders. So in a B&Q or the like in the UK, you get a whole mixture of people, right from your professional builders to your once-a-year part-time DIYer.
Yeah, that seems to be the push of the big box stores in the U.S. too. They get, they supply everyone, including the builders, because you get a kind of business contractual relationship there. It'll be interesting to see if Costco, when they come to Taichung, if they do some of that too, because of course they have some, you know, low end things for the business relationship. But I did notice at B&Q that, like you said, paint, a lot of paint stuff. You know, when you go to the real hardware section, you get out of the household section into the hardware section, which is my next video down the list. Lots of paint stuff and drills, man. They had drills just everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think maybe you mentioned you were getting a drill before. You were getting some stuff. So maybe drills is a real common kind of tool people need. And when you go to the Five Metal store, there are drills, but they tend to be your big heavy-duty drills. And this leads me into the photos I had. I just wanted to present these photos for people who maybe aren't familiar with Asia, specifically Taiwan, Hong Kong, and China, because the buildings here are all made out of concrete, poured reinforced concrete. And these yes. pictures kind of show what houses look like. I just walked around my house, but I think it's very typical, Stephen. I mean, if I showed you these pictures of my house, you mm-hmm. wouldn't be very surprised, would you?
Are you showing me the
yeah, do
the
you,
photo?
Yeah, do you see the photos on the website there?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've got like a hook on a wall. I've got some paint peeling
yes.
off. One, uh-huh. the third picture is I tried to put one of these hooks into the wall with a hammer, and they just had these little nails,
yes,
and the whole,
yes.
the whole concrete, you know, just fell away.
Yes.
I have a light fixture that's, nobody's pulled on it. It's just slowly, year by year, come out of the wall, and there's no way to put the darn thing back in, because there's nothing to hold it in there. And so I was just mm-hmm. saying, you know, DIY is a little bit difficult when you're facing a concrete wall.
Why?
Yeah, it adds a whole new dimension. I reckon with that third picture there, you need some of the training that B&Q offers on putting in a fixture. I was real interested when I went into B&Q. There's just so many demonstrators and people who are actually giving a little bit of education to the customer about how to use the product. I mean, not all the staff are super well trained, but they try to offer some sort of guidelines on how to use whatever you're buying or do whatever you're buying.
Is that a carryover from the UK, James?
Not that I've seen to such an extent. In UK, they have quite a lot of in-store TV and in-store boards with instructions, but the staff don't have the same sort of proactive demonstration role and aren't all the time checking out if you know how to do something or advising you so closely when you buy. I've really had lots of experience here of people in B&Q asking me what I'm doing, if I'm able to do it, if I need help, and so on, which I think they seem to be quite keen on playing that kind of a little training role to help people get comfortable with doing some of the little projects they're planning to do.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because when I was shooting the video, you can see in there, you know, you have some of your employees, and it was a surprising ratio. It's at least half the people I saw, their T-shirts on the back did say demonstrators, and not
yeah.
just so they're not just the people to walk you around. They're really there to show you how to do something.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's that was a real nice part of B&Q, that real sort of participative flavor. And when I went to buy some shelving recently, I walked in and I was checking out sizes. And after a certain point, I wasn't sure if I could get it cut down to the sizes I want. And I asked one of the assistants, and he started asking me about where I was going to put it in my house and whether I'd thought about some different type of wood, and that I could combine this slightly rougher wood with a nice sort of plastic cover I could stick on, and it'd be much more convenient and easy to do. And he was really trying to advise me on what I might want to buy and how I could fix it to the wall. And he took me right over to show me the different brackets and checked out if I had the tools I needed to put it up and so on.
Wow, that's very proactive then.
Yes. I mean, I think probably maybe my experience is a little different because I'm a foreigner here, but it was very proactive and very helpful, and going way beyond what I'd have got in UK in terms of different suggestions and checking out how comfortable I was with doing this kind of job.
Very interesting. I know in the U.S., the hardware stores probably about 15 years ago in the late 80s really pushed to have that kind of attitude. People walk in, and you want to build up that long-term relationship rather than just making the profit now. Because if you can instruct someone, they're going to come back to you later and buy from you again. And maybe this time they won't buy anything, but those instructions really help them get that kind of relationship they're looking for. And I think B&Q in Taiwan's really got the right approach this time, because True Value, you may not know, True Value was here. True Value is the biggest hardware chain in the U.S. It's not a big box store. It's a hardware cooperative. You have a lot of hardware stores together. They opened one not far from my house, and this was back in maybe the mid-90s, and I was, you know, the big box stores hadn't arrived in Taiwan yet, so I was very happy to have this all-American kind of icon here. And I did go shopping there a bit, but I was very disappointed because they hired just kids from universities, basically part-timers who didn't know anything. And I have this one time I walked in, I just needed to get a nut. I just needed a nut. I didn't need anything else, just one nut to go on the end of a screw. I knew exactly what I needed. I walked upstairs where they had the nuts for some strange reason. And I got it, walked all the way downstairs and went to check out. But the checkout counter girl there couldn't check me out because she said it didn't have a price attached to it. And so she had to use the speaker to call somebody down from upstairs. They came down and examined it for a while in a very mysterious look, took it all the way upstairs, came back, and by this time it's going on 10 minutes and I'm very frustrated. And they came down and I think the price was something like 12 NT, which is something around like, you know, at that time it was like 50 cents US, 50 cents for one nut. And I was so frustrated, and then the price on top of it, I just said, okay, you know, forget it. And I walked right at literally across the street. I just crossed the street where there was a Five Metal store, walked in, got the same nut, walked to the counter, and the woman looked at me and laughed and said, we don't sell them one by one. We sell them by the kilogram. Just take it. And so I took it, and I've been shopping at that Five Metal store ever since for all my hardware. And True Value closed. They did not make it, and they withdrew. Interestingly enough, I was trying to check out some of their documentation. I can't find any reference to their ever even being in Taiwan. So I would call that an utter failure.
Yeah, that's, well, as they say, success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan that you want to forget about real fast. Yeah, so
nobody remembers that. it's a perfect situation to contrast, because I think James maybe and Stephen, you agree with me. Part of the problem is that, you know, when I went to high school, I don't know, James, if you get this in high school, I think it was maybe junior high school, we get like woodworking shop in school, we get some hardware education actually in school, not to mention your dad's always fiddling with something, whereas kids here don't get anything like that. Stephen, I don't think there's any such thing as having a hardware class unless you were in the old technical education system where you actually get a kind of associate degree in a technical subject like motorcycle repair, car repair. But if you're in the mainstream, you don't get anything like that, do you? Did you ever have like a woodworking shop class?
We did. We did have the kind of class, but we teenagers and our parents didn't pay more attention to it. You know, we always take up this kind of the class for the mainstream education.
Like, oh yeah, I see. Like you have a class, but then you kind of skip that class so that you can push in more mathematics or something like that.
Yes.
Technically, that's illegal.
All right. So that's the I think that's the main reason. The people in Taiwan, at my age of older than me, do not DIY themselves.
Yeah, so I think that's a good reason for B&Q to use that education system to get out there, and, you know, when people come in, say, hey, how do you install this? Let me show you how. And I did see people being shown how to install a light fixture yesterday when I was over there videoing. So that seems like the direction to go. And when I saw True Value, they didn't have anything like that. And you want to know the funniest thing was when you shop in True Value in Taiwan, everything was packaged in these very nice plastic containers, just like back in the U.S. But of course, they were all made at that time. They were still being made in Taiwan. So they were exported to the U.S. and re-imported to Taiwan, and they were about double the local price.
Yes.
Right. And there's one thing for sure, that you're not going to kid a Chinese customer that way, that somehow, because it's gone to the U.S., it must be super special.
Yeah, that's a thing. You know, a lot of people are surprised. There's that country of origin effect. I don't see it working that way at all here. I don't see a lot of people falling down over something just because it's from the U.S.
No. And probably somewhere it said made in Taiwan as well at the bottom of the package. So customers probably cottoned onto that real fast.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, anyway, that kind of wraps it up. I think the last couple pictures I had there were a stove. You know, in Taiwan, we buy these stoves that are just a flat unit about, what would you say, a few inches or about 20 centimeters at its highest, maybe. And you attach it to a gas tank and wooden chairs. These wooden chairs are everywhere in Taiwan, and I've seen them a lot of places in China, too, walking around looking inside people's homes because, you know, people have the concrete homes and the first floor is usually wide open and you walk by. Very, very normal kind of stuff, and I think this would be a kind of, I don't know, I think from an American point of view, it's very minimal. James, do you see a lot of homes that have this kind of a minimal aesthetic about them?
Yeah, it's, I mean, the thing that probably strikes me immediately about your photos here is the fact that everything's white. We go right from your hook photo through to the photo with the wall behind the chairs, and everything is white. And particularly in the living space, there's that big aesthetic for clean and white and bright. Although some people say that maybe in the bedroom and other areas, they're willing to color the area. So that's like another real sort of opportunity to DIY it and color it. But when we start to look at some of the furnishings, yes, it's sort of real basic and minimalist compared to that sort of built-in look that we often have in UK and more complex kind of furnishings. Yes, it's much more minimalist. That really rings true for me too.
Yeah, I think I always think in the U.S. the one thing everyone has to have in their living room or their den is that big lazy chair, you know, where your dad sits down and he just rolls back, his legs go up. James, my dad's for sure got one, and they're changing them every few years. Does your family have one? Did you have one of these big lazy chairs you sit in and, you know, put your legs up?
My dad is just... I wish he would get a big lazy chair, but his dad had one, yes. He used to just roll back in and watch the TV and read the paper and just relax into. Yeah, I think that room doesn't have the same sort of, like your chairs here are very much sit, drink a tea and go, rather than sit, relax, read a paper, watch a little bit of TV and so on. The living aesthetic sort of comes through in those different furnishings kind of in an interesting way, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point because, you know, Taiwan was a major furniture producer in the late 70s and 80s, exporter, but I don't see much of that stuff really filter in locally. I don't see these lazy chairs at all, and I think this is a great point you make. Sit down, drink a cup of tea, get up, get moving, because that's the real kind of aesthetic and the real kind of value people have. The only thing that comes close to that, I think, and maybe Stephen can comment on this, would be massage chairs. That seems to be a popular item. They're not the same as lazy chairs, but you sit there and you get your back massage, right? Stephen, you got one of those?
Yes, my dad had one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one massage chair. Maybe most of the Taiwanese work very hard, right? And then their back hurt, so then they need this kind of massage.
Yeah, that's very interesting you put it that way, because I think from everything I know from living here 20 years, I think we all can agree, you know, people here are motivated to work hard, whereas the lazy chair kind of a value is take it easy, enjoy yourself. I think if my family saw me in one of those chairs, they would begin to gossip very quickly about how lazy I actually am.
Yeah, it's real interesting. Yeah, the massage chair is like that 20-minute pit stop just to sort of keep yourself alive and keep working.
Yeah, you're allowed to do it, but it has to be because your back is already breaking. Now you're allowed to sit in one of these chairs, but you know you're not allowed to sit in it if you're just sitting down taking it easy. That's just gone too far.
that's for sure.
Well, I think we've covered it. You know, I've got these videos here. Everyone can take a look and expand on them. If you guys find any other videos and or shoot anything interesting, some photos, we can upload them. Any final comments? Stephen, you got anything to say?
Okay, I would like to say more about Wujin.
Yeah, go for
can
it.
Can I?
Yeah.
Okay, Wujin means in my memory, Wujin means gold.
Gold. Mm-hmm.
Silver.
Silver.
Silver. Silver. Yeah, silver and metal, tin, copper, copper.
Copper. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, this kind of stuff.
So these are like okay. Five primary kind of metals.
Yes, yes. And the hardware made of this kind of stuff, this kind of materials.
Yeah, most of it's made out of one or the other of these five metals, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's we call it five metal shop.
Gotcha. But concrete's not a metal. My house made it totally out of concrete. Yeah, I gotcha. So that makes a lot of sense, and I think that's for sure when you walk into these five metal shops, that's what you see, a lot of metal. James, anything to add?
I think we've had a really interesting kind of discussion that's covered the whole, sort of gone from the very localized format to some of these new formats. And I think it's interesting that someone like B&Q seems to have grown and seem to be fitting into the market real well here, and particularly the kind of service and the sensitivity to the level of customer knowledge. Seems to be really part of their success, or one of the dimensions that seem to be an important part of the way they work over here, and something that we've obviously talked about. So I think that's a kind of interesting point of learning, interesting observation that we've all obviously had from this discussion, and what we see sort of each time we go out and do a bit of shopping.
Yeah, I know. I shop at B&Q myself. I didn't discover it until just a couple years ago, and then I've bought some shelves and things there. So yeah, I think this is definitely an option that's increasing for a lot of people like us. It'll be interesting to see what, you know, the so-called younger generation, what they really do, because of course the Taiwan economy it's okay, but maybe there'll always be just enough people who can come over and do it. Of course, in the U.S., that's hard because you live out in the suburbs. But here, everyone's so packed in. Maybe there'll always be room for these older five metal stores. Maybe there'll always be a space in the market for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that could be real true. It took a long time, certainly, for the big stores to get a complete grip in the UK. So likewise here, maybe it'll take a long time for those smaller stores just to get subsumed in some of these mega stores, or maybe it'll never happen. Interesting, food for thought.
Yeah, it's a good thing to think about, because we can still see a lot of stuff in places even like Hong Kong where very, very similar. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in China, because now you have that situation where you go from basically the very bottom level where everything was the very traditional five metal stores, and then you're getting all the big box stores all going in at once. So that'll be a big question mark for that transition too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we'll wrap it up. That's a show. And go ahead, Stephen. Something more.
Okay, may we invite Anne to say something?
Anastasia. Is she still online with us?
No.
She's gone away.
I think she fell asleep.
Okay.
I think she fell asleep. Yeah, we'll look to have, it looks real good. We'll look to have some guests. I was looking to maybe invite someone to talk about some of the DIY they did. So maybe in a future show we can find some people. Because like I said, I have some colleagues that did some DIY. And sometimes people combine it with the things they buy and we can get guests on in the future. But our current guest is checked out. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to if we can invite the person who rebuild his house, her house.
Yeah, that's a good point. If we can find someone who's actually
1901.
Build it. And you know, the thing, I think one of the key points of the 9/11 earthquake was that there was a lot of government funding.
Yes.
So, you know, a lot of people, even if your house was only slightly damaged, you get government funding and go spend that on a lot of this kind of DIY stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess that funding was probably never quite enough to take you back to where you were before, though.
Well, I've seen some people got better than they had before, actually. It all depends on where you live.
What I was wondering was whether whether they managed to leapfrog up to better than they had before, because they did a chunk of DIY, so they made their money go further.
That's what I'd really be interested to see, because I've seen a lot of people whose houses were completely damaged. Of course, that was really terrible. But then a lot of people on the margin, because the government's funding came down to be, you know, basically different towns, down to the kind of town level. And so parts of towns were getting big money, and I saw a lot of people, even their house was only slightly damaged, the house got ripped down, and they built a real nice new house.
Jeez.
not DIY, it was all, you know, contracted out.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that was the upside of a horrible situation.
Yeah, it was good. It was good for contractors. Of course, I think the government was nervous about an economic stall too, so they just pumped that money in to make sure the economy recovered from the earthquake quickly. So it was a lot of people did get really nice houses out of it, and but I think other people were more marginal and did do a lot of DIY stuff.
Right.
Yeah, that's real good. Yes, it'd be nice if we could get some other perspectives, because literally recently I've been going around asking people, you know, who uses B&Q, and I really don't find a big group of people. Yeah, I keep asking people. I said, "Do you go to B&Q? Do your family go to B&Q?" And I'm struggling to find people that say yes.
Well, it sounds like your dogs are there.
Sorry.
is that Stephen's dogs or James' dog?
No, that's right. Stephen's dog.
Yeah.
My dog's sleeping outside the door.
No problem. Yeah, James, I think this is a real interesting point, you know, that a lot of researchers or market researchers or people from Western companies will come over to check out the market, and they'll look at a B&Q. Or they'll look at a Walmart maybe in China, or they'll look at a Costco maybe in Taipei, and they'll get the impression that these guys are just, you know, going gangbusters. But you and I and Stephen, who live at kind of the regular person's level here in Taiwan for a long time, we buy at the regular shops, I don't really find many people doing that, which tells you there's a really big market. There's a really large section for growth if you can get it right.
Yes, though what I'm not sure is, I'm still asking the question, who shops at B&Q and what do they buy? Because clearly, like our discussion earlier, we're saying, okay, it's almost, in UK, it's almost everyone. You said you go to B&Q, someone said, yeah, you know, the last 2 months ago I went to B&Q, I needed to get some nails. Yeah, 2 months ago I needed to get a screwdriver. Last week I popped in to get a new shelf for my bathroom. Whereas here, like I've asked my students, and then I've asked, do your mum or dad go there? Almost zero. In other words, it seems like the target group, I'm not sure what that target segment is for B&Q in Taiwan.
Well, from my walking around... Oh, go ahead, Stephen, you got an idea?
Okay, sorry. As I know, the B&Q over the... Like you go to a B&Q and looking for some stuff, and they can they have the worker to fix for you. You just buy the materials.
And they can come to your house and do it for you, Stephen?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that when I've been filming over there with the consumer cam, what I've noticed is I see a lot of, I guess you would label them upwardly mobile, middle class, kind of yuppie types, people who obviously look professional. I see a lot of husbands and wives together. And of course, in Taiwan, usually that means an older man, maybe in his late 40s and 50s, and a somewhat younger woman. And maybe they just got a new house or they changed houses and they're going there. And I really get the impression that they're picking stuff out, but they're not going to put it in themselves. They're either going to, maybe like you say, have the store, have someone come over, or they're just going to get someone else to do it anyway.
Right. They offer this kind of service to do the dirty words. Okay?
That's supposed to be the fun part, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, to a lady, then there could be to a Chinese, Taiwanese lady, he could be a dirty work.
Yeah, I think so, James. Maybe the demographic is something that's just the right demographic that you're not running into them too much. I'm thinking maybe mid 30s, upwardly mobile, so they're already out of school. Even if they have continuing education, they're done with that. They're busy working in a business or a company.
Right.
And so these are the people that we probably don't run into that much.
Yeah, no, that's why I deliberately asked, does your mum, dad go there? Because I see that's the sort of the going to be the target age group. And yeah, one student mentioned what Stephen's just talked about, that they seem to have a service in B&Q that you can pick the things out, then the workers will come over and do whatever's needed. Which really kind of fits, but then it still sort of begs the question about why don't they just call up an interior design company?
Yeah, why don't they just call someone to come in and do it? Because you can call some guys. I mean, some of these guys you've seen, the independent contractors, they ride around in their whole shops on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Yes. It's so maybe that's the niche. I think that'll be an interesting thing to sort of try to uncover, whether B&Q is deliberately niching itself towards that group. In other words, whether they're actually offering a little packet of solutions so that you have that sort of kind of middle, slightly older group with more disposable income, they're going in, they're enjoying the ability to really touch and see colors and see textures and so on, and then they're getting someone who's then going to create that into a nice package and do the dirty work of actually installing it. So whether that's happening by accident, as in B&Q sort of cottoned on to the fact that people don't want to get their hands too dirty or don't have the time but have the money to do it, or whether they're actually deliberately niching, I think would be kind of interesting to know.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that's a real big contrast between here and the States, at least, and probably what you're saying in the UK too, because in the States it really is you go in there and buy it to do it yourself. Although you can get help and you can pay for extra help, but it's not like they're going to come home and do it for you. Of course, density helps a lot here. Population density is so high. You know, you can be in a B&Q and get across town real fast.
Yes, we've got a couple in Tainan, and as you say, the population density is so high that I think that's really reflected. One on the east, one on the one on the east side, basically one on the west side here. Maybe there's others. Those are the two I know. So they kind of really serve those two big densities.
Okay, well, I think that just about wraps it up then. We were wrapping it up already, and there was some interesting comments. So that's...
Does that mean lots of post-production for you, Clyde?
No. I'm gonna try to put a tagline on it. So that's Talk of Asian Marketing. Join us next time when we discuss another interesting local topic of marketing. And we'll have James with us, and Stephen, and me, Clyde. And hopefully we'll have some interesting guests too. This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Meow, 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 meow